Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's January 8th, 2016. You're listening to the best poker cast on the interwebs. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
I keep thinking I'm going to say 2015.
Yeah, you know, I wrote my first check. Again, I'll pause for laughter for people. He still writes checks.
He still writes checks.
And I put the six down there. I didn't have to think about it.
Wow. Impressive.
That's usually when people screw it up, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because you're just like brain dead, right? You know, 1, 3, 15, arr! And then you have to, at least when it's 15, you can make it to a 6 pretty easy.
That's right, that's right. It's not one of those really horrible years when it's 0 to 1. I guess 0 to 1, just make a really fat 1.
Fat 1, yeah. You know? Yeah. But, 1 to 2 you can make, 2 you can make into a 3.
Kinda.
3 you can't really do into a 4.
No, that's a tough
that's
one
tough,
right there.
Right? Yeah.
4 into a 5 is tough. 6 into a 7, pretty much impossible. 7 you can do into an 8, I guess.
6 into a 7. Yeah, it'd have to be one of those fanciful 7s.
Yeah, with the cross through the line
like the
or whatever.
The bicentennial yeah. logo, the 76. You know, 7 with booty.
At that point, you're just ripping out the check and writing void on it and then saying, okay, next time I have to remember I have a... What do they say? That checks are out of order or something? You know?
Yeah.
And now we're going way back to... That's in the olden days.
So now only people 80 and older are listening to the show. But
yep.
For those 5 of you left, let's talk about poker.
Yeah, let's talk about online poker for all who are 80 and older. Because I'm sure they're sitting around with their dial-up.
All right. This week's big news was an arbitrator has ruled that the Iowa Tribe of Oklahoma can open an online poker site, which is reopened to international players as well as players in 3 states that regulate online poker. The tribe's site, PokerTribe.com, set to launch later this year, powered by a company called Universal Entertainment Group that previously had agreements with 2 other tribes as well. The ruling likely means that all Oklahoma Indian tribes can also operate online casinos if they wish, but still to be seen is how well a new, smaller player in the online gaming marketplace can compete with larger, more established brands, and whether regulators in Nevada, New Jersey, and Delaware will permit their residents to play on the tribal site as well.
Yeah, I wonder... 2 things. One, in the beginning, we were talking about it was an online poker site, but then we said casino. So is it really just it's a casino?
Oh, right now, what the Iowa Tribe has said is that they're going to launch with online poker and then eventually add blackjack and slots and things like that.
Okay.
So the ruling allows them to do any kind of casino games. They're just going to launch with poker. So.
Now, in a world governed by reason, you would think Nevada, New Jersey, and Delaware would permit it because it's as if they're going to the land in Oklahoma and playing there anyway, so but this isn't a world ruled by reason, so I have a feeling they won't let it happen.
Well, yeah, I guess you could argue the reason in 2 different ways. 1, they've got a regulatory process and framework set up in all those states for people to be legal there.
Right.
So I think it's reasonable for them to assume that since they already made other companies go through that process and abide by those rules, that if you want to offer your games to the players in that state, then you have to go through the same rigorous application and oversight, right? So I think that's the reason it's not. Plus, then you also have the argument of, you know, you got to protect your own interests, right?
Right.
So, you know, you've got companies in there saying, whoa, hey, I went through all this stuff. How come these guys aren't?
So we make them go through all that. Is it going to be allowed, though?
Well, that's a good question. I think I would say Nevada generally is a little more accepting of gaming regulation.
Right.
So I would say that if the site wants to get a Nevada gaming license, it probably could get one there. I think what's interesting and different about this, obviously, is that this site, obviously being on a sovereign nation, can be open to international players.
Right.
And I don't know what the gaming regulations necessarily are in Nevada, New Jersey, and Delaware, but I know that none of those sites are open to international players. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to guess that that's not going to be something that the tribe is going to be interested in agreeing to.
Right.
Which, really, let's be honest, the online poker market in Nevada, New Jersey, and Delaware, even combined, is so minuscule that if I was to open an online site tomorrow and you told me, hey, Scott, you can't be in these three sites, or these three states, I'd be like, all right.
Yeah, right? I mean, they'll have the same, they'll have a better chance of succeeding than those three states because they can go international and they have their own state anyway, which I don't think Oklahoma's terribly populated, but, you know, the fact that they've opened it up to international now, its player liquidity is vastly improved.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you so know? Then the question becomes, if you are in Germany, let's say, what's going to make you want to play on PokerTribe.com rather than PokerStars.com?
Right.
Or PokerStars.eu, whatever it is these days.
Right, right.
Right?
Yeah. No, because you can already play on
there's going to be way more wide sites. There's going to be way more games to be offered, way more promotions probably. Plus, you got a history of, you know, the company and stability of it, right?
Right.
So you don't have to worry about the trust as much. So that's, I think, is the real key here, is that it depends on what their expectations are of the site, right?
Yep.
You know, when we opened Annie Up Magazine, our expectations weren't that we were going to be the global leader in poker news, right? Mm-hmm. So there wasn't any reason for us to strive for that, right? So as long as we made enough money to pay what the salaries we walked away from, we're happy, right?
Right.
So if these sites aren't trying to be the next poker star, if they're just trying to make a little extra money for the tribe, yeah, they'll probably succeed.
I think so. I mean, the other thing, too, is I remember when online poker was still in its infancy stage, and I was trying every room there was just to see what they were like, and then some rooms were softer than others. Like, I remember 888, which it wasn't called that, but it was a subsidiary, it was a different one. Like, right, what do they call them, skins or whatever? I mean, all the money that I earned on that site, you know, was ridiculous. It wasn't because of all their bonuses and all that stuff. It was the players are horrible. So, not saying that the players on PokerTribe.com are going to be horrible, but you may want to try it out just to see what kind of, maybe it's softer than the sites that you're on. And so there's that lure of it. You always want to just try out something new, just like everyone else does. When new poker rooms open, they go there, and then they find out, okay, I'd rather not travel this far. I'm going to stay at my home casino. But they still check it out. So maybe there's something on this site that will... But still, like you said, you know, there may be more available at PokerStars.eu or whatever it's called over there. And eventually they'll go back there. But they might filter a few away. You know, they might get a few people...
Oh, absolutely. There are going to be people that are going to play at the site.
Yeah.
No question about that.
Yeah.
So again, it all comes down to the expectations of the tribe. I would say outside of the tribe, I will bet you $2 right now.
Okay.
You can send the paper boy from Better Off Dead to collect if I'm wrong. That everybody on the outside is going to say the site's going to be is going to be a failure, and then once it launches, that it is a failure. Because I think everybody is always going to compare it to the biggest fish in the pond, right?
Yeah.
And you can't do that. I don't think I don't think it's reasonable to do that.
No. Anything that's turning a profit, especially these days, and if it's legitimate and regulated, then you're way ahead of the game. You know? And it's just a matter of time before, you know, if they can hang on long enough, too, and make just a nice little nest egg for the, you know, the tribe and stuff. And then all of a sudden, if it ever does happen federally here and the whole country can play there, now you're talking, okay, we've been established, we've been around for a while, we've gotten and ironed out the kinks, and now we can launch it nationally as well as internationally. Then that's what you're hoping for, too. So like you said, if they have modest goals and can hang around long enough, it would work out for them.
Yeah. If nothing else, it's the good news for folks that live in Oklahoma, I think.
Yeah, I mean, the hard thing is going to be is if all the tribes... Because there's quite a few in Oklahoma decide to launch
sites.
Yes.
You know, and then it's like, okay, how are you? There's not even enough. There's hardly enough players to keep the rooms, you know, busy that are physical rooms. You know, I mean, I guess they're hoping the international thing is what's going to help keep them afloat, but.
Certainly, they would be better suited to all be together, which is this Universal Entertainment Group, which actually is based here in Florida. It was actually three tribes that were all together on this, and two other ones at some point during the long process. And it's been a long process.
Uh-huh.
Dropped out and decided they didn't do it. So now, obviously, that one, I don't know what those two are going to be. Hey, remember us? We're back. Or other sites are going to do that, or whether they're now, you know, you know, the companies that are behind the Nevada, New Jersey, and Delaware sites will pop in and say, hey, we know how to do this over here, so now we're going to offer it to Windstar or Choctaw or whatever, right?
Right.
And then they have better product. So, but yeah, it would be better if there was one. I'm all for competition, but when you're trying to compete, sometimes you need to be band together.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so you can know it's a slow news day because I'm talking about the Green Bay Packers. on a poker show, right? But here's the question: how my Green Bay Packers will fare in the playoffs after this brutally uncharacteristic late season collapse is anyone's guess. But one thing is for certain is that there isn't much for players to do in this tiny town when not playing football. And trust me, I've been there a lot, and it is a sleepy, tiny town.
Yeah.
But a recent Packers.com interview with this year's rookie class sums it up, and you're going to like this: bowling and poker.
Yes!
Almost exclusively what these guys do when they're not on the field or preparing to be on the field.
I am relocating.
Bowling alley, and they play poker.
You realize how much money I could win if I went to Green Bay, Wisconsin?
Just hang out with the Green Bay Packers rookies? Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, man. These guys have tons of money and no talent when it comes to these two endeavors.
Why, you don't know no talent?
Not my talent, baby.
Oh, okay.
I'm going there making some cheddar. Cheese, get it? Cheesehead, cheddar. That's pretty good. Thank you very much.
See, the joke's more effective when you don't want to explain it.
I know. They
out there for the people that get it.
I have to admit, I didn't read the article because I wanted to have you explain some of the stuff to me. But are these guys like playing poker while they're bowling? So they're doubly distracted? Or?
No. It sounds like they just go out and you know bowl a couple frames some night, and then they go back to their apartments and have a little one skittle, two skittle poker game.
Because if they're doing it together, that's when you can really make some serious cash. Because they're totally distracted by each endeavor. So, but that's hilarious.
Professional athletes, and you're reducing them to babies that follow the shiny keys when you shake them.
Yes, I am. And the thing about it too is like I've seen these guys, like these pro athletes, try to bowl. And it's hilarious.
Well, but they've got a really bad center of gravity and stuff, right?
Yeah, because that's what bowling's about. Center of gravity.
You're not even a defensive tackle. I mean, this is not just a kicker here, right?
Yeah.
This is 400-pound beefy guy, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think it's harder to bowl when you're that big, right?
Yeah, it is pretty difficult when you're a big person to bowl. So, I'll just raking in the dough.
That's only one half of it, though. So.
Oh, I know. Believe me, I'm not too worried about their poker skills either. I've seen the way the Packers play and the decisions they make on the field.
All I'm going to say is every world champion for the last 47 years has been 26 years old or younger, right?
Oh, man.
Every rookie on this class is younger than that. And I'm sorry, my friend, you are nowhere near that age.
You know what? You wrote that they were uncharacteristically late season collapse. I don't agree with that. Was that sarcasm?
It wasn't sarcasm.
Oh, man.
They always win every game in December.
But you know what, though? I think they benefit from this loss, to be honest, with these last losses.
Oh, my gosh. Are you kidding me? Yeah. I saw my brother. The only thing that... and my wife, I'm like... The only thing that I regretted is that we're not NFC North champions for 5 years, because that's only happened twice before.
Uh-huh.
Right? That's... I like streaks, right?
Right?
So I'm sad about that, and obviously it's sad that we don't get a home game, but would I rather play the Vikings, the Seahawks, or the Redskins this week? Give me the Redskins every day and twice this Sunday.
Yeah.
So,
that's the other thing, too. You go on the road, you beat up on them. If you can beat them, you got some momentum, and it's possible you can even come home and host
Here's the thing, is even if you are, even if we were to have the home game and win, we're still going on the road against Arizona or Carolina anyhow, right?
Yeah.
So nothing changes there.
Oh, but. Okay. Unless one of those teams lose, right? Oh, no, they have the bye. There's no way for you to host a home game now?
Not in the second round.
Not in the second round, no way. But in the third round is possible, right?
The only way would be if we were playing Seattle.
Yeah, because Seattle could be... Yeah, so you can still host Seattle in the NFC title game.
Yeah, okay, now we're really... you know, I got a Powerball ticket here, right? Got better odds of winning that than I do that app.
You bought that Powerball ticket with Annie Up money, right?
Hell yeah.
All right, baby. So we split it if you hit it. That's funny. Split it if you hit it.
Split it if you hit it.
Hey, Annie updates. Chip's Poker Room in Wichita, Kansas, and the Windy City Poker Championship outside Chicago are the latest poker venues to commit to hosting an event for Annie Up's Restock the Shelves charity food bank initiative with Blue Shark Optics on January 18th. And many participating rooms have added event details, including extra chips and raffle tickets for donations of food or cash. Get details on all of our restock events, including how you can volunteer for Team Annie Up, by visiting AnnieUpMagazine.com/restock and encourage your favorite poker room to host an event, too.
Look at that. You got plenty of sleep last night.
Yes, I did. And I'm drinking
last
soda.
Last week, you were just... You were like a baby giraffe trying to read that thing.
I'm drinking soda. That's helping.
This week, you're a gazelle.
You know, and for our poker cruise, we'll only have staterooms reserved for our April 18th Annie Up Poker Cruise out of Port Canaveral, Florida, through February 1st, which is coming soon. So book today. Get all the details on the cruise and our other sailings to Alaska and the Caribbean next year at AnnieUpCruises.com. You know, Port Canaveral, I like that port because it's right across the way for us.
Right.
And then if you're there and you've got time to kill, you can see... You know, the Kennedy Space Center. Sure. You can stop at, you know, any of the huge theme parks, like literally on the way for us and stuff. Yep. It's just a real good stop for us all the time. Sure. It's always something, too, when you come over that hill. You're driving for so, you know, across the way for so long, the flatland. You come over the hill, and then boom, it's just wide open. There's the Atlantic Ocean. There's sometimes you see the space shuttle and all that stuff. Just crazy.
Kind of hard to see a space shuttle now, but I know.
Yeah, I know. But I mean, you know, in the years past that we've been doing it.
Right. You can see a rocket out there.
Yeah, you can see a rocket. Maybe you'll see SpaceX out there or something. I don't know. Trying to stay modern here. I don't know.
Yeah. We lost that at the very beginning of the show.
Hey, each week we spotlight a listener who calls our hotline at 206-424-6145 or emails us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Floor and Hand of the Week, we send them something cool. This week's prize is a 30-minute telephone lesson and workbook from Thomas Gallagher Casino Seminars, which specializes in poker odds and math at poker911.net. Comes from Steve P. I'm not going to even try to say Pavelchek. Hey, I said it.
Yeah. Oh, look at that.
Wow.
See, because you didn't try.
I know.
It just came right out.
It just came in nice and easy.
Mind games, right?
Yeah. He says, I was playing 1-2 No-Limit Hold'em. And
I should pause and before you read this.
What?
Say that I totally took... a very long email from Steve, and rewrote it into this.
Oh, okay.
It's not really his voice.
Hedging your bets here in case
there's... It's his information, but it's my voice in a more compact question.
Okay, so if there's any mistakes, then we know who to blame.
Exactly.
All right. He says, I was playing a 1-2 No-Limit Hold'em, and call a raise in a big blind with Queen 9 of Spades. The flop is 4-5-6, 2 spades, and I bet out, trying to steal the pot. The turn is no help, but I bet again. I miss on the river, but decide my only way to win the pot is to bet again. So I shove. My remaining two opponents fold. A couple hands later, villain one is still steamed with the previous hand and asked what we had or whatever. I don't know what I had. It's like all of a sudden you're helping him out now with this one. It's your rewrite.
Everybody's a critic.
He says, I shrug.
I had. There,
there you go. Thank you for fixing that. I shrug and say I don't remember. Oh, okay. We're doing a little mic here. Johnny Chan. He says, he asked if I hit the straight on the flop, and I say yes, and he says he laid down ace-ace, which the players next to him confirm as he showed them. With having a tight image at the table and not one who usually takes a bluff this far, would there have been value in showing the bluff after villains 1 and 2 folded or when questioned? Would your answer change if this was a home game with players you play with weekly?
I'll start by saying I almost never see value in showing my hands.
Hmm.
Particularly in a situation when I've got players that are clearly steamed and wondering whether I had this straight or not. The fact that they got folded and they didn't know keeps them on tilt for a long time. As he said here, I mean, I didn't even add this word. This is actually his word. Villain 1 is still steamed. This guy's sitting there, he's like, oh my gosh, I had aces. Did I lay down to this knucklehead that played Queen Nine of Spades? Or did he have this plot out of the street? And he'll never know. He'll never know, and it's going to mess him up for the rest of the session, and he's going to be easier to beat.
You think so?
So if you turn over the Queen Nine there, and now he's probably going to blow up as well, too. It just depends on the personality. But I'd rather have people guess all day long what I'm playing, because then they don't know anything about how I'm playing.
So then your answer doesn't change for home game either. You wouldn't show that home game either.
What I said to him about that was that, you know, our home game, we have a little fun in the home game, right? Obviously, right. We've gone through this a lot on the show. We're competitive. We're trying to win each other's money. But at the same time, we're there to have fun and become better poker players. So we got a really good situation going.
Right.
So part of the fun maybe is to show. And the other thing, too, is we all know each other so well, right?
Right.
We all know our styles. We all know what kind of moves we make. We know what kind of cards we play. So, yeah. So I'll show every once in a while the home game just to show I'm, you know, because you guys always think I have nothing and limit hold 'em, right?
Right.
So if I have aces, I probably show them and just say, hey, look, you know, because usually the conversation goes, yeah, God, what kind of ridiculous crap is Long playing this time? He probably has 6-4 and flopped a straight. I'm going to fold. So I show the aces, and then we all get a chuckle out of it. It doesn't change any perception of me or anything like that. It's a chuckle thing.
Right, right.
But when I'm in a casino and I don't know these people, I'm not looking for chuckles, right? I'm looking to win money. And so if I can keep somebody guessing, I'm not. So I would say, and I said almost never. So what I did say here, too, is that obviously he believes that he has a tight image, right? That's what he said. Yeah. We don't know what the opponents think, right? We always got to remember that. But let's assume that they also think you have a tight image, right?
Right.
So showing a queen and nine of spades here and running this really impressive bluff, by the way. I mean, it's a semi-bluff on the flop, right? But they turned into an outright bluff by the end. Will now show them that you're not as tight as they think you are. Which could help you, and it may not help you. I guess you got to figure that out on your own, right?
Yeah.
So I guess the short answer of the long answer is that if you think showing your cards will be a help to your game, then you should. But I think more often than not, showing your cards has unintended consequences and is a bad thing that's going to hurt your game.
I feel like in this situation, showing the Queen Nine could have helped him because this guy would steam for the rest of the session. By saying, yeah, I flopped the straight, you're letting him off the hook. So for all intents and purposes, you're telling this guy you beat him, and now he can relax with folding. You know, because he did what he was supposed to do with aces. He raised pre-flop.
Right.
And now you told him, yeah, I'm letting you off the hook. I flopped the nuts or whatever. And so now he can relax and get back to playing normally.
And it can confirm to his opinion that he's playing right.
Right. And he'll also make you consider that originally he told us that he had a tight image. So now you tell him that you flopped a straight. You don't necessarily have a tight image anymore, because why are you calling a raise with 7-8 or 7-3 or 2-3? So now you're giving away information anyway by saying, yeah, you flopped a straight, and doubly bad for you, because now you've let him relax, too. You've also blown your image of being a tight player, if you indeed do that. Now, you're not a tight player. You played Queen Nine of Spades, so now he doesn't think you're a tight player, so now you got to become a tight player. So now you've already... So if you don't say anything at all here, you continue to do whatever you want to do, and this guy's going to steam. But if you show it, it's going to steam for the rest of the session. But now you've blown the other part of your story that you're not tight anymore now.
All right, so we're saying the same thing.
We're essentially saying the same thing. I think there are, and since you've said almost never, so there are situations where showing it would really go in your benefit. This is one of those situations? No, I don't think so. I think you lose too much here, given that you've got an image that you're trying to protect. I would have said nothing at all,
right.
And he would just keep on thinking he flopped straight.
I would also say, though, that if a week or 2 weeks or a month later I'm at the same table with the same villain one,
right,
there is an opportunity for me to show that's going to benefit me, because this guy steams, right?
Right.
Again, this is emotions is what costs people the most money in a poker game, right?
Right.
Oh, I'm trying to beat that guy. I'm going to beat that guy so bad. Right? I think we got a couple hands of the week coming up in the future here that are about that. You know, this guy was wild and crazy. This is my chance to take him down. That's wrong, right?
Yeah.
You're playing emotionally now instead of rationally. So if I know I'm playing against an emotional player who has anger management issues and is not carrying a weapon, I will do whatever I can to, you know, within rules of etiquette and to piss him off.
Right, right.
Set him off. Get him all upset and crazy and jumping around the table like a monkey. Because now he's out of his game. And now I can take advantage of it, right?
Yeah.
So now if I know this guy is predisposed that way, in the future, this is not probably the best spot, but in the future, there's going to be an opportunity where I'm going to show him that I just bluff the hell out of him and watch him just explode.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Which is all the more reason that I like to be really calm at the table because, you know, if somebody shows me something and shows me they bluff, you know, I'll chuckle. Well, hey, good play. Tap the table. Right? I'll go back to playing. I don't care.
All right.
So all they're doing now is giving me information that I'm going to benefit from.
All right. Hey, find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been? Email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. We'll have Hollywood Casino Toledo Director of Poker, Elliot Schechter, tell you how he would have ruled. This week's prize is an upgraded membership to PokerRadius.com, poker's best social networking site and home of the Antiup Group discussions. Come from Mike in Pittsburgh. Says the rebuy period is close to ending in a $55 tournament in a Pittsburgh casino. The big blind apparently decides he's giving up and wants to lose his chips so he can rebuy. Even before the cards are dealt, he pushes his stack forward, but everybody folds to him. Next hand, now in the small blind, he does the same thing, even before the cards are dealt. This time, the player first to act goes all in and knocks him out. The players start to talk about whether he can do that, is it legal, should the dealer have said something, etc. I think it's an angle shoot at best, since if someone made a bet, then that's significant action and he can pull his bet back. Is that right? At worst, it's just playing against the rules for acting out of turn, and the dealer should have made him pull it back since the cards weren't even dealt. Someone asked the dealer if what the guy was doing was allowed, and he just kind of mumbled. I don't think he really wanted to get involved. We could have asked the dealer to call the floor, but I don't think anybody wanted to slow down a tournament with 15-minute levels. What would have been the proper ruling, and should the dealer have spoken up?
As he says, it's quite common for most players and dealers to think that because the TDA rules contain a remedy for action out of turn, that this action is allowed and does not draw a penalty. The TDA might need to add language to clarify this for all of us. Playing in turn is a rule in all forms of poker, including tournament play. Players intentionally violating the rules of the game are supposed to receive penalties, starting with warnings or missed hands and escalating from there. This should have been stopped from the posting of the first out-of-turn all-in bet. No oversized blinds are allowed in cash or tournament play. The dealer should have allowed the player to post only the amount of the big blind and should have called the supervisor to explain the rules and make any necessary decisions. Finally, playing more hands during blind level is more important than the rules being fairly enforced for all players, and everyone must live with the consequences of this inaction.
Yeah, Elliot's really good at this.
He is. He's been around a long time.
I mean, I know poker room managers are supposed to be good at this, but I mean, he covers everything when he does these. It's really good to have him doing this, and I couldn't agree more. If you're a dealer, as soon as you look over and see this guy's got more than the small blind or the big blind in, you know, it's, hey, you're not allowed to do that. I mean, you're going to throw off the game anyway. People are going to look over and see all that money, and they'll be like, what's going on over there? You know, and then you're also changing the way people are acting, too. I know this guy's going to go all in, so I'm going to, you know what I mean? That's just not right. I mean, yeah. You're giving additional information than you know how to do anyway, and it's just...
So many things wrong here.
Yeah, pro etiquette. From a
player perspective, it's just so... One, it's wrong, and it's unethical, and it's poor etiquette. It's just boorish behavior,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
From the dealer perspective, I don't know if this guy's having a bad day. He's got some jawbreakers in his mouth. He can't talk. That's why he's mumbling, but... You should never allow that bet to stand. That's just ridiculous. I mean, that's like first day of dealer school.
Yeah.
You can't put out more of the blinds or not. Sadly, I see this often, though. I see dealers just, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
They think nothing of it because they know the person's going to go all in anyhow, so, you know, why say anything? But
yeah.
It does make a difference because it makes people think that they can do it themselves, which they can't. At some point, someone's going to raise and the guy's going to pull his bet back. Now it's going to cause a huge problem, and he's going to be correct in doing that, right? Because the action changed. And then the dealer's going to have to explain why he didn't do it. Oh, I thought it was no big deal. Well, turns out rules are big deals.
rules are big deals.
Plural, plural, right?
Love it.
So, and then I think Ellie's right that they should have asked for the floor to come over. Now, I know it's a tough spot. You know, 15-minute level tournaments are brutal. And it didn't seem like anybody really cared her because the guy left and everything. So I can see the case for not wanting to slow the game out by bringing the floor over. The problem is when you don't do that, is this dealer is going to continue to allow this to happen. That player is going to continue to do it. And so I think we have a responsibility to the other players in the tournament, the other players in this room, and all the players in the poker community to make sure when something wrong is happening, and pretty severely, this is pretty severe, to have that conversation so everybody learns and the dealer is reprimanded and deals properly, the players play properly, even if you miss 3 minutes of this 15-minute level.
Right. Yep.
My two cents.
Very good. Hey, we get to complete O'Malley's 100th episode today. The century mark. Ooh, a lot of people wishing him congratulations on Poker Radius, so this is pretty monumental, so here we go. Let's get to it. Here comes part one again.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I am Malcolm O'Malley. This week we are seated in a $1, $2 pot limit Omaha 8 game. That's right, no more circus show. The table is full of experienced players as we sit 8-handed. We bought in for $200 and have pretty much broke even for the night. The under the gun folds, the plus one folds, and we are in the MP with the ace of hearts, jack of spades, jack of diamonds, deuce of hearts. This is a very good hand, and we're going to make our standard raise. Playing with the completed small blind, we make it $6 to go. It's folded to the button, who calls? Both blinds fold, and we go to a flop. The button is an experienced player, but gets into trouble by calling too often and not being aggressive often enough. He started the hand with $250. There's $15 in the pot, and the flop is a great one. The jack of hearts, six of hearts, five of clubs comes down. It's important to bet your draws in Pot Limit Omaha 8 when you have them, but this flop really doesn't scare me at all. We have the nut high, a redraw to the nut flush, or a boat, and a draw to the nut low. We couldn't ask for anything more than this. The only question now is, what to bet? I think two-thirds pot is good here. This is a situation where we want to start building a pot, but don't want to scare the opponent away. We're hoping he has something like ace tray and a propensity for overcalling. We bet $10, and our opponent makes the call. With $35 in the pot, the turn is the queen of clubs. We no longer have the nut high, but we are in very good shape. We decide to make a $20 bet into the pot. But this time, our opponent raises us to $50. What on earth did he pick up here? And more importantly, what's the move?
I'm terribly worried about this raise. I mean, he could have pocket queens, but we have lots of outs to that. Hearts and a case jack. Plus, we're still live for the nut low. It's also entirely possible that he picked up two pair to go with this low draw here, which means we have the high on almost lockdown. Against a table of experienced players, I'm going to err on the side of caution and just call here. But I definitely could defend a raise as well.
Yeah, I'm going to call. I mean, we have the nut low draw, the nut flush draw, and quads as a possibility, right? I believe we have. So, I mean, even if he has three queens, we would still have all those outs to get half the pot, all the pot, whatever. So, and I don't want to raise, in my mind, just because there's only one card to come, and it seems this guy's eager to put more money into the pot, and I don't want to be reopening the betting in this game and then realize I've got all my money in there on draws.
Yeah, so I guess let me defend my raise, why I could defend it. Uh-huh. Let me defend my defense of a raise. So here's the thing. There's a lot of high hands that he could have here, so we could be raising with the best hand, which is awesome, right?
Yeah.
Obviously, he has the queens, and we're dead to the high, but we're also live and getting to the nut low. And that's key to me. I mean, if we just have a low draw, then I don't like that, because he could have the nut low draw, and then we could be drawing dead, right?
Right.
Or almost dead. But we have the Nutlow backup. It's like an insurance policy, I think. So, you know, he has to have exactly the queen here for this to be bad. But even if he has that, we still have a chance of recouping that money on the low.
And the high. We saw the nut flush draw. Isn't
right,
full
exactly.
House
yet, so, yeah, we have a lot of opportunities to scoop here. So it's just a matter of what our risk... I mean, I don't know what his stack was, so...
Right.
You know, obviously, if he has two queens and he has ace deuce in his hand, he's probably going to raise his back, and then it's going to get pretty big. But I'm not even sure I mind that. So, like I said, with experienced players, I feel a little more like it's likely that he has queens here and also has a good low draw. In that case, you know, now I'm, you know, if he has queen, queen, ace deuce, we're in trouble.
Yeah,
right?
We're in trouble. We need a flush.
Right. So, but if we're playing a bunch of inexperienced players, then it's different. So the fact that he explained this as a table of experienced players is why I would more cautious. But I think there's lots of reasons to raise.
All right. Well, here comes part two.
Hello again. I'm still not convinced we're beat here. In fact, there's only one hand we're losing to, and it's queen, queen. Now, it is entirely possible that he holds some combination of queens, but even if he does, we still have 40% at the nut low and about 17% to still win the high and scoop. That's 57% to win at least half the pot. And again, that's if we're in a nightmare scenario, unless he has a nut low draw as well. But if he had had something like ace, queen, queen, deuce with a suited ace of clubs, why would he have just called our preflop raise? This to me falls under that monsters under the bed way of thinking. We make the call. With 135 in the pot, the river is the tray of clubs. We think for a time before checking. Too many nut hands. I think there's a good chance we're chopping anyway. And I'm going to check on the off chance we're getting quartered. Our opponent appears to have the same thought process as he thinks for a time as well before checking and flipping over king, king, queen, queen for a bigger set and the high half of the pot. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying sometimes when you flop the world, your heart gets crushed when it all comes tumbling down. I hope to see you on the film.
Zariah, I really love Omaha 8, and I know you hate it, but you know, in a hold-up game, I think it's easy for us to get spooked off hands like this, you know, which in this case obviously would have been a good thing since he had the queens. But in split-pot games, we, as I mentioned before, we have this insurance policy, right? And it came in handy here. It gave us the courage to stay in this hand. And obviously, we would have preferred a scoop. But that low draw protection gave us the courage to make that call to find out really whether he had the one hand that could beat our high.
Yeah, I wrote, false courage isn't courage, but I'll take it. Here's the deal. My one question is now, why wouldn't you bet now? He has to have specifically queen, queen, ace, deuce for you to lose.
Point. Yes, exactly.
So it's pot limit. It's not one bet. You could literally bet pot here and put this guy to the test because you could very well have the straight now. You could very well have had a straight and this guy checked behind, so we know it would have worked. I'm not saying we're whatever, but I'm just saying for you now to make the nut low and for him to specifically have queen, queen, ace, deuce is very, very hard to swallow here.
That's a powerball there, right?
Huh?
That's a powerball ticket.
Yeah, I mean, that's... So, I'm thinking, okay, you want to check and be happy with the half the pot, go ahead. But
yeah,
you could take the whole pot.
Let's, you know, make sure we explain that, right? We're at max rake now. Because sometimes when you're like, you know, you've got some bets out there, then if you... In Omaha, if you do this back and forth, now you're just adding the rake, right? But we're at max rake, right? So,
right.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, if there's he bet there was 50 to raise early, so we're definitely at max rake. So you're not losing anything other than getting quartered to this guy somehow has, you know, he would not have bet this way if he had 3-4, or what was it? What's the wheel? The straight? Oh, okay, so he had... So he could have had 4-7 ace deuce or something, but I don't think this guy's making a $50 bet on that turn with that hand. Right. You know, a queen, queen. I mean, just there are so many hands you can eliminate from reasonableness from this.
But really, yeah, you're right. There's two hands that we lose money by raising here.
Right,
two
because hands. It's what? Ace, ace, queen, ace, deuce, queen, queen.
And the other one is...
Ace, deuce, 4-7 or something.
That's likely, right.
And one of those hands doesn't make any sense. So it makes very little sense with the way he played it. So, okay. I'm thinking about making a bet here. I don't know about you, but I'm not saying you have to. I mean, you can be happy with letting him
bet. You made a good point, though, because if we we put them on queen-queen on the flop, or a high degree of possibility.
On the turn, right.
Right, on the turn, right. I'm sorry, turn. Now, that straight is out there.
Yeah.
So an experienced player is going to look and go, oh my gosh, did this happen to me again?
Right.
And so it gives you a shot of scooping. Again, that's the whole point of this game is scooping, right?
Right.
And you don't always have to scoop by having the cards. You scoop by having the bet and making people think you have the cards.
Right. And you don't even need...
Absolutely raising
here. You don't even need something as ridiculous as 4-7, because ace-deuce-4 in your hand now gives you the straight and nut low. So you could have ace-deuce-4-rag, even jack or anything, and played the hand the way you played it. You know, suited ace with deuce-4. And now you've backed into the straight, and an experienced player would have seen that. I would have taken a shot there and bet there, Mike, because it's just heads up. So you don't have to worry about getting quartered by someone else, you know, in the hand. You can get quartered by your opponent, but he'd have to have a very specific hand to beat you for both sides of that
pot. And even if you get quartered here, if you make this play 10 times, you're going to get quartered once.
Yeah.
Twice, right?
It's worth it.
It's still a long-term profitable raise.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I agree. It was good, though. Good, you know. And then to clarify something, I don't dislike Omaha 8. I dislike pot limit Omaha 8.
You still shrug every time we call Omaha 8.
Well, yeah, I don't mind Omaha 8, though. It's PLO 8.
Again, guys?
What
are we going to do next, a horse racing game?
Well, you know, the pot limit part of it just rose me the wrong way. I love pot limit Omaha, and I love Omaha 8. I don't love pot limit Omaha 8. It's like playing pot limit study. I mean, it makes no sense. All right. Go ahead.
All right. So time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at antiupmagazine.com. This week's prize is 1 month of free poker strategy videos from One Hand at a Time, along with the poker instructional videos online. Antiup listeners save $30 by registering at oneHandAtATime.com/antiup. Sorry, Chris is going crazy on the file here.
Oh, sorry. Is that bothering you?
It's like I'm in a rave or something here. My screen's blinking pink and stuff.
Sorry about that.
Anyhow, that's onehandatatime.com/antiup. Please support our sponsors. And this week's hand comes from a longtime listener, Dan England. He says he's been away for a while, but he hasn't forgotten about us. Still listens every week.
I always think he's in England, too.
Yeah.
No, I don't know why.
Colorado, I think, right?
Yeah, Colorado.
Could be wrong.
No, I think it's Colorado. I just always think he's in England for some reason.
All right. Well, that'd be very convenient, right? Like Johnny Utah and Point Break would have to play for University of Utah.
Hey, it happens.
State, right?
It's not unprecedented.
All right, this hand he's playing in a 1-3 no-limit hold'em game at Hollywood Casino's Poker Room in Kansas City. He's on vacation, so we know he doesn't live in Kansas City or Missouri.
All right.
On vacation, so. This hand came about half an hour into the session. I have built my stack up to $400 from my original buy-in of $250. And he says, I know everyone says they built up their stack.
It's almost like...
It's true!
It's like a prerequisite now for everybody to explain that now. I feel bad.
But it's true, he says.
All right.
He's like, I like the way I played this hand, but I also know there could be other ways to play it. And not only that, you could shoot it full holes as well. So here it goes. Oh, good. Right. Carte blanche.
All right.
Let's see, the button straddles for $6, so this is a button straddle room, right?
All right.
And which means that we are first to act in the small blind with king-queen.
I don't know what type of player this guy is to the extent that...
Straddler, so he's an idiot.
Yeah, I have to agree with that.
So it's a button straddle game, so really, technically, if you're in a button straddle game, you should be straddling on the button. Which is why they should be a button straddle game.
So he's not necessarily an idiot. Right?
Not necessarily.
Not necessarily an idiot.
Right, yeah. You're going with that.
I don't know. If the guy's the type of guy that just, when it gets to him, he does what he's supposed to do with the straddle and raises no matter what he has,
right.
I might do something crazy and limp here for the six and then watch him put 18 in and then make it 60, you know, and just take it down.
Really?
I don't know. I might do something like that.
I did not expect that.
Well, you know, it depends. It depends. King-Queen is not a great hand. It's actually a trap hand.
Yeah.
I might just fold it, to be honest with you. I don't, you know, I'm out of position the rest of the hand.
Lie to me. That's what I'm going to do. I would hope most people would do that. I'm going to assume that Dan doesn't do that, or this hand of the week's going to be the worst one ever.
Yeah. But for fun, you know, let's just limp along and see what happens for fun.
For farts and giggles?
Yeah, because I really don't know what I mean, I would look down at king-queen, and I might consider folding, so...
All right, here are all the reasons I'm going to give you to fold here, right?
All right, can't
wait. One, it's king-queen. Right. So people get excited. Oh, it's two big cards. It's not. It's two big cards, but not the biggest cards.
Right.
You're going to get outkicked 1,000 times with this hand, right?
Right.
We're in the small blind. That's the worst position at the table, remember?
Right.
We have to act first the rest of the time. Not only that, but we're facing a button straddle. And generally, straddlers like to raise.
Right.
So it's going to cost us more than $6. And if somebody, before it gets to the button, decides they have a better hand than what they think the button is, they're going to raise that as well. Now, obviously, we don't have to call any of that. But now we're just throwing $6 in the wind for farts and giggles.
Good thing there's a win.
Yeah. There is absolutely no way anyone anywhere can explain to me why they would call this $6. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, you know, I get only if I know that this guy's going to do it with any two cards when it gets to him.
By the way, I love you. Thanks for writing.
You know what I'm saying? No, but seriously, though, if the guy thinks, all right, every time this guy straddles, he just pumps it to 24 no matter what he has. Right, I mean, his range is horrible.
But then at that point, all right, so if you're going to do that, then the problem becomes now you got to have hand-to-hand combat with a crazy man.
If he calls.
King, queen, right?
You might just take it down there for nothing. You know, who knows? You're saying now if I make it 60, this guy's going to call with any two cards? Maybe.
I'm saying right there at that point. So I'm saying right now, if you're saying I'm gonna call the $6 here, right?
Right.
And hope that it folds around to this guy, and he's going to auto-raise like he always does. And then I'm going to pop him.
Right.
That first pop is the first blow in the hand-to-hand combat. What if he pops you back?
Now we're screwed.
Right. Is it worth it? Is it worth it to take a stand here against that guy? In the worst possible position with him, with an easily corruptible hand. Or wait for a better opportunity. Now, obviously, he's always going to have position on us, so that's going to kind of suck. But
yeah, I
don't have to be the table sheriff here. We don't always have to bankrupt the idiot at the table, or the straddler at the table, or the loudmouth at the table. It's not our responsibility to always do that. We have to pick and choose the right opportunities to do that. And king, queen, and the small blind is not the place I'm going to pick.
Okay.
I don't think it's a place anybody should pick.
Okay. Well, like I said, I would
I
think
I'm being
about
wishy-washy
folding,
here.
But I'm saying if there's a particular way to play it where you can actually play the hand, it depends on how this guy is in playing his straddle.
All right. The only way I could defend it is if this guy is not being perpetually raising with a straddle, which would be so out of characteristic for straddlers that it's hard for him to believe. But if he just likes to put the six in because, hey, everybody else is, or look at me, put six in, you know, that kind of idiot, and I thought I could see the slot for $6 and then flop it hard, all right, maybe. But we're asking a lot of the table to help us out with this plan at this point, right?
Because
we're the first to act. Other people are going to have really good position. They're probably tired of the straddler, too. They probably have the same ideas. So someone at some point here, I think there's a good chance, is going to raise this guy. And we're not going to be able to. I think it's very remote that we're going to be able to see this flop for $6. And then if we do, then we have to still flop it big. We're asking a lot out of his hand right now.
What about just playing it and, you know, I mean, there aren't always guys who raise their straddle. You know, there might be guys who do it and then realize there might have been players in the hand who limped, who have raised straddles before after limping, you know, check raising or re-raising or whatever you want to call that. And that is, so I just think that there could be a way to play this hand. I mean, I hate to have to fold king queen because I got some guy straddling.
No, there is a way to play it. You could raise here. You could just say, hey, look at me. I'm in the small blind, the absolute worst position against a button straddler who's probably going to raise.
Right.
And my hand is so strong that I am raising right now. So get out of this pot. And that probably will help get you heads up with this guy. I don't think it's going to win the pot preflop, which means now you're still going to have to fight this guy hand-to-hand out of position the rest of the hand. So maybe now you fire on that flop, and if it didn't hit, then he's going to fold. That seems like a lot of risk in a cash game. In a tournament, it's a different story. But in a cash game, do I really want to put myself...
Well, there are no straddlers in it.
Well, no, I know, but I mean, you know...
I know.
In a tournament, I need to accumulate chips, so I need to be a little more aggressive. I need to do a little weird things. In a cash game, I can just... If I'm at 1-3, I can just sit there all day long playing backgammon on my phone and play ABC and probably walk out of here with some money.
Yeah. Especially since you're in the small of this guy's straddle. you're only giving up a buck. Right. And you usually give up that buck anyway in the small, so why come back?
I just don't see any reason that we need to be John Wayne here.
All right, so the ways that you could play it if you wanted to actually play the hand was you're recommending raising at least. So you're
I think
giving
that's the
an
only
indication.
Way you can play this.
And you don't think limping, letting him raise, and then re-raising and stealing all that money is going to work?
I guess it could be the same thing, but what happens if somebody raises in the middle?
Yeah.
I think you're taking too big of a risk of letting somebody else do that. And then at that point, what, are you going to raise that guy? No, you can't raise that guy.
Yeah. I do know that very few times...
Your limp raise plan is dependent on everybody folding around to this guy, or limping around to this guy.
Very few times have I played in the game where someone's straddling, where I knew he was going to be the raiser no matter what, where I have limped, and then he's raised and I've re-raised him. Very few times have they called me. Very few times, because it's just standard what they're doing. And there is a one time that it could happen, and of course it would end up being our hand of the week, because that's why it happened. But I'd rather
be in the hijack than do that.
No, I understand, yeah, because you got fewer people to fade, and you've got... I understand.
Nobody left to fade at that point.
Right.
You know, cut off, I mean.
Right.
You know, nobody else to fade at that point. Everybody else is folded, and now it's just me and this guy, and I have position on him all right now. Now I'll take a lot of shots at him. But I'm on the other side of the fence.
Yeah.
The bad side of town. No way. Fine. Take it.
All right, so if you're going to play the hand, you want
to dollar all night long.
I'm going to limp, because I'm going to not listen to Scott Long. And I'm going to let this guy raise, and then I'm going to repop it.
All right, good. So I'm in the minority here because Dan, our hero, decided to limp, too. He was actually put in quotes, decided to limp.
Because he had an intention of raising, or because he... Well, see what he said. I don't know what he said.
Right. So I decided to limp since it's like calling a small raise, and I'm first to act. If someone raises, I can reevaluate. So as I realize this is a weak move, all right, so score point for me. But I don't want to put $18 in the pot right now. You could definitely say a raise is appropriate, especially because I'm out of position. I want to try to limit the field. But in this case, I just put in the $6. It says, honestly, the straddle was acting as a raise and limiting the field anyway.
Ah, the plot thickens. So, honestly, the straddle was acting as a raise and he wasn't re-raising. It was thinning the field, right?
Well, I guess what he's trying to say is that it's already $6 to go now. So
yeah.
People are going to think twice about. Which I'm going to poke a hole in that theory as well, too. That if you're in a 1-3 game and you're going to limp for 3, you're going to limp for 6 when it's a straddle. It's different if somebody under the gun looks down their hands, has happy feet, like Navarro would say, and makes it 6 to go. Now right. I'm like, okay, maybe right. aces? And betting small to lure me in? Fine, I'm done. But
right.
I don't think this $6 is limiting the field in anywhere near as much as our hero thinks it will.
Okay.
All right, so there's three other players call the straddle, and the straddle guy checks his option.
Oh.
And get this, we see a flop of queen, queen, five, rainbow. Drown Scott out of the conversation. I'm going home. You guys finish this up.
Oh, man. All right, well, I'm gonna check.
Okay.
I mean, I got no reason to force everybody out of this hand right now. Did you say it was rainbow?
It is rainbow.
Too. Yeah, so I got zero reason.
It's a tough hand to bet here and get any action.
Yeah, so I'll check and hope somebody bets.
Yeah, it's a little different if you have something to protect against and you feel a little more emboldened to bet, but this is tough, right?
Yeah.
Plus, we got a straddler still in the field, right?
Yeah.
So somebody could get a little frisky with this, and that's fine. Man. All right, here it says, obviously, I like this flop. I'm first to act and check here. He says, again, I want to see what the others do here, and I want to disguise my hand a bit. An old guy in the corner who has me covered, he has a large stack, probably 600 to 700, bets $20.
And then we're next act, is that right?
Really can't be, because we still have the button in here. But apparently the next action is on us.
Okay.
How that happened. But
I can give up a free card here. I'm just going to call in case someone else might come along for that 20. I want to get some money in this pot, maybe put the hammer down on the turn. But
here's the check raise does the same thing as if we bet out, right?
Yeah, it does the exact same thing as if you got $20 from one guy.
Right.
But, I mean, he may, yeah, because if you check raise earlier, he's going to have the queen still. If that's why he bet 20. He's going to bet 20 because he thinks he's, I don't know, if he's bluffing, at least you got $20.
I guess the
bucks
only thing where it does is if he has a queen as well, right?
Right.
Then if we raise him, but then at that point, if he raises us back, now we got to figure out, does he have a better queen?
Yeah, that I don't think could possibly happen. Ace Queen would have to have raised this crap with all these straddle limpers and everything. There's no way Ace Queen just limps too. I think you want to thin the field with Ace Queen, so that's telling a story is not working there.
Should be Queen Five is going to cost $6.
Yeah, Queen Five. That's such a perfect flop. I can't play my game thinking he's got the exact flop that beats me. Plus, I have outs. I'm not thinking of a Queen Five beating me. And besides, if you have Queen Five, why would you bet? Just like you said, we defended it with King Queen, not betting. We're going to bet it with Queen Five. I don't think so.
Fair enough. Yeah. Okay.
We're crushing this.
All right. So our hero calls and the others fold. So our head's up now.
Okay.
And our hero says, I have him narrowed to pocket pairs below jacks and a weakish ace for now.
Well, I don't put him on those either. I mean, a weakish ace? What is a weakish ace betting? What does the weakish ace have? Ace five? He thinks five and queens are good? Maybe that's it. Ace five, but...
Well, I would say... I think the hands can be pretty wide here.
To bet 20?
Think about it. We have king, queen, right? And we didn't want to bet because we didn't want to drive anybody out of the pot, right? So conversely, if you had no hand and you bet here, people would be driven out of the pot, right?
Well, why are you putting them on hands then? I mean, how could you possibly put him on that hand if he's betting just to get
him out? What I'm saying is you got to keep open that this guy was just bluffing and you called. And
oh, I am. I'm just talking about his comment right now. I'm not talking about what I'm putting him on hands. I wouldn't put him on a pair. You know, if he said below jack, so you're telling me a 10-10 doesn't raise in this hand preflop? I mean, even 9-9, 8-8, I think you do. When a straddler and all these other limpers and everything. So I think they raise with 10-10.
So good set mining hands, though, too. So
10-10, though, I think that's pretty strong to not.
It's just 10s. That's what Daniel O'Brien said.
It's just 10s at the end of the hand. It's not just 10s pre-flop in a straddle pot. And a weakish ace, it's just so specific to say I think he's got a... Why? What gave you the indication it's a weak ace? So I can't say that either. I don't know what it is, but I don't put him on something specific, that's for sure. Like that.
Yeah, let's sum it down. We feel like we're ahead pretty strongly that we're
Yeah,
ahead.
I think so. That's what I would say, but I wouldn't put him on a hand.
Yeah. So if we feel like we're pretty... I mean, yeah, we don't need to... I don't think we need to put people on hands here then, right?
Right, not yet.
Either he's got nothing or we have him beat.
Yeah.
The outside chance that he's, you know, just not thinking clearly and betting with ace-queen or 5-5.
Right.
Right?
I mean, something like queen-jack could be out, and he's betting that because he wants to see where he is. But again, why are you betting... You've crushed the deck here. You know, or even the same hand as us, king, queen, but maybe that would have raised. I don't know. We didn't raise with it because we're out of position, but maybe this guy is in position. He might have raised a king, queen, so maybe he doesn't have that either. I don't know. But, all again, right, so you're scaring people if you bet.
All that, knowing that, and we're going to act first on the turn, we're probably going to check anything, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Him hang himself again?
Yeah, I think I'm going to check again.
Okay. All right, so he says his opponent keeps staring at the flop, however. So a queen also seems likely. Plus, he's sitting up straight and seems very interested. Our hero says, I plan on betting the turn. Ace hits that does not make a flush draw. And I have to admit, at first thought is that I'm happy, as that's a card he could have, as he could have been betting the flop just to take it down, an effective move on a paired board. That's, I guess, what I was trying to say before. Right.
So, but again, it's just so hard to put him on specifically an ace. Now he's getting the benefit of saying he hit an ace maybe, so I'm going to get paid off. I just couldn't put him on an ace. I'd put him on any two cards on a paired board like that if he's betting.
I would say an ace is a good card for us here then, right?
Yeah, it's a good card for us.
Because it makes it say, now if we bet out, it says that we're going to, I think I'm going to stick with my plan, right, and check raise. And
yeah, I want to pretend like I'm afraid of the ace.
Yeah, I'm an ace, and if he has any ace, then he's going to probably stick around. Right.
Yeah. I'm going to check and let him bet again, because now if he did have that ace, he's going to bet it. And what you're hoping for is that he has, you know, ace rag or something. I mean, kind of. You know, at this point, I'd rather have him just have a weaker queen, because then he can't get away from it.
Well, true, yeah.
But, sure. I would check to him again, let him look like I'm afraid of the ace. And if he hits it, too, whatever. But if I'm going to bet him out. I just feel like if he had an ace... You know, any decent ace he would have raised, and if it's not a decent ace, why would he have bet? This seems weird. So
you could have a really weakish ace here, a suited ace that's going to call a $6 straddle preflop, right?
Sure.
Take a shot.
It's just that bet after the flop that's got me perplexed.
But that's great. I mean, if he's got a weak ace, we like that right now, right?
Right now we do.
You got that crushed.
Yeah.
So I don't think we're really concerned, right? So let's let him hang himself.
Yeah, I'm going to check.
All right, our hero bets $35.
Well, whatever. I mean, if he was taking a stab at it earlier and didn't have the ace, now he's going to fold. You know, if he was just taking a stab at it with Jack 10, now he's going to fold.
That's my whole point in checking here, is I don't think we give up in too much value if he checks behind us. If he does bet, then we can check raise and try to get some value here. Obviously, there are some hands that have his beat, so that's kind of scary. But, I mean, betting now, if he has nothing, he's gone.
You're representing the ace by that bet. And now what if he did have 10-10? You would have kept him along for a while if you had checked at least. You
right,
know what I mean?
So I think the only scenario where this bet actually works for us is if he has a weaker queen than we do.
Right.
Now he thinks that we're betting the ace, that he doesn't have it. Now he's going to raise, and then we're going to re-raise. He's going to re-raise, and we have nuclear war, and we're going to, I was stupid enough to play king, queen, and small blind. Ship it.
Stupid enough. All right. Dan, did you hear that, Dan?
Scenario where it makes.
Hear that, Dan? He said you were stupid.
He already said we're going to shoot some holes in it. So. It's not over yet. I can still look terrible.
Shoot holes in his story, not in the person. That's called an ad hominem. You're making fun of the person rather than the actual
ad
action.
Ad hominem. Wow.
Enjoy that.
Big words.
New on that, new on that for a while. All right. So I would have checked. He bet. What happens? He called?
He says the opponent stares at me a bit and then calls.
Yeah. He's got a queen.
Seem like he's Hollywooding.
He's got a queen.
All right, says, again, these are reads, which are essentially educated guesses. On the river, an ace hits. So the final board, it's queen, queen, five, ace, ace.
Okay, well, given the fact that he just called, I could be nervous, but I could also be representing that ace. So now I can represent aces full of queens rather than queens full of aces. But I don't think I can check now. I think I have to bet again, because if this guy's got a queen, I can get him to fold it because I've represented the aces. And if he has the ace, well, then if I make a blocking bet or something where it's small enough that if he goes crazy and raises me all in or something, I can get away from it. He might have that ace that we put him on earlier. I just don't like a check here now. I think I need to bet.
No, I think you're right. I think the story we set here is that we didn't believe this guy had queens.
Right.
A queen, right? Now the ace comes, and we have an ace, so we're going to bet out. And now the river is an ace, and we boat up. So we got the same hand if he has an ace. If he doesn't have an ace, then he just lost to us. But if we check, then it looks weird, I think. So I think we got a bet here.
Yeah.
And if he has an ace, I don't think he's going to raise. I think he's going to assume we have an ace and just call us and be happy to split the pot and be surprised when he wins, right?
Yeah, I mean, I was convinced he had a queen by just calling a 35, but it wasn't a good queen. I have a feeling he was afraid of us for some reason. Because if he had a big queen, he would have raised our $35 bet, because he wouldn't have been afraid of the ace.
All right, now, so here's the other question then, I guess. Now, if he does have a queen, what's the best way for us to get money from him? Betting out, where we risk him thinking that the ace just compromised him and he folds?
You could check.
Or check and let him think that, hey, we were just taking a bluff at the ace, and now he's emboldened to bet, and then we raise.
I hate putting the pressure on myself, though. I always like taking the pressure off me. If he makes some huge bet now I've got to consider, did he really have an ace? Did he really have that ace 5 that I was, or ace 3 that I was putting him on earlier, and now he's got me beat? Because then he's saying, why did he bet into me when the ace showed?
I think there's a lot of ways we lose his hand, so I'd rather not poke the bear. Right.
See, I don't know. I don't know if I want to. I don't want to be the one that has to make the decision now. I'd hate to check and have him put in 150.
Right. Now, I'm the one. So I would rather bet here, set the price, and hope he just calls.
Yeah, like $45, $50, $60, something like that.
In other words, I don't want to get into a check, have him bet, and then raise him, and then have him re-raise me.
Right.
Right. I'd rather bet now and just call whatever his raise is. Or have him fold and take the pot down, or have him just call and hopefully take the pot down.
Hopefully, yeah, or split with him, whatever he's got.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. All right, well, I think I'm going to bet somewhere between 45 and 60.
Okay. Let's see. All right, our hero says, I think for a minute I have two thoughts. Number one, it's hard to put him on an ace here unless it's specifically ace-queen, and the odds of that are unlikely. He didn't raise, and he was willing to raise even straddles with big hands such as ace-queen. Having said that, he's also a tight player, old man tight. Like, I'm going to get a shirt that says that. I'm old man tight.
Don't wear that in prison.
That's good.
Thank you.
Good today, buddy.
Thank you very much.
Remember, I'm the one who wrote that old man stereotype letter a couple years ago.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen nothing to spell that stereotype. He's shown down big hands and hasn't raised all that much. 5-5 is certainly a possibility, but unlikely. Given his action of betting the flop and calling the turn and the way he stared at the board, I'm putting him on the fourth queen. It's a risk doing that, as it also seems unlikely, but I do it. Number two, given that, if I check here, he could try to represent the ace and bet like $100.
Yeah.
I also think a bet here could scare him, given that he could think I have an ace-queen or had an ace. I think a bet here gives me a better chance to win the hand. If he raises, I'll fold. And if he raises to make the same play I'm making, good on you, man. I bet $50. It looks enough like a value bet, but it's probably strong enough in my mind to get him to think. Maybe Maybe $75 would be better, but I think $50 serves the same purpose as he'll raise $50 or $75, and he could still have ace-queen here.
I don't feel ace-queen is... And the other thing, though, is that he says ace wasn't really likely, but he was putting him on a weakish ace earlier, and I think a weakish ace might play it the same way. He might be afraid you have the queen, so he just calls that $35 bet you made. Now on the river, he's been bolding, because it doesn't matter how weak his ace was, he's got the nuts unless you have queen-queen in your hand. So, you know, or ace-queen, which that doesn't make a difference. So the odds of him having ace-queen are very rare, because he would have raised pre-flop, probably, no matter how old and tight he is.
Right.
So, I like the bet. I mean, we talked about this already. I like the bet.
All right. He says he thinks for a long time, and I'm relieved because it says to me he doesn't have an ace. Mm. He finally folds king queen face up.
Oh, the same hand.
I show him my cards, and he sighs and says, "Good bet." He called my $50 a good blocking bet, though it was almost a bluff at this point. So I take a nice pot, and that I wouldn't have if I hadn't have bet. He says I'm working on finding spots to put pressure on my opponents. It seemed like this was a decent spot to do it.
Yeah. I mean, that's tough to fold. I mean, $50, I'm looking for as a blocking bet in the sense that I'm hoping that he just calls that. I would never fold $50 in that pot, not with the queen.
Not with the king queen, yeah.
With the king queen.
I give him credit for putting the story together. And I said the way Dan played it is different than me. Right. And I couldn't have gotten that fold the way I wanted to play it.
Right.
But the way he played it, it really did scream an ace. And then you get that ace on the river. And now you're thinking, you know, hey. I mean, there's a lot of people who say that saving that $50 is how you become a winning player.
True.
When you really feel like the story just doesn't make sense, and not saying, "Well, it's only $50. I want to see it." You know.
Here's why I don't believe a fold is good there. And tell me if I'm wrong, but and the show's getting late, so I didn't want to be too wordy. But hey, if I have an ace, why am I calling this guy's $20 bet after the flop? If I have ace rag, what am I calling for with queen-queen-five out of position for the rest of the hand? On a queen-queen-five flop...
At that point, if I think you're bluffing and trying to steal a pot, then I should raise it, right?
Right. There's no reason why ace-queen calls $20. Calls $20. If you had ace-queen, you would have raised the straddle, or you would have just limped along. You know, I mean, you may have limped along and called, but ace-queen usually wants to get the field thinned in a game where everyone's just calling the straddles. So ace queen raises pre-flop there. So any other ragged ace would not call the $20 bet after the flop. So I can't put you on that ace. I realize you're representing it. We talked about it earlier, but I have to call that $50 as just for sound mind. I don't want to be the guy that was tilting earlier when we were, you know, I need to call that $50. It's a big enough pot. I've got a pretty good hand, and you know, for you to have the ace, if I play it back in my mind, it's hard for me to put you on that ace. I know you represented it with that $35 bet. But what ace really calls their ace five? Maybe ace five.
Yeah.
But it's just that's such a narrow hand that I have to call $50 there. I really do.
I will agree. I can't argue with you.
Wow, king queen same hand. That sucks. I mean, it's good for our guy, but it sucks for the old tight man.
I'll say again, though, I think Dan thread the needle on this one. I just, I think long term playing king, queen, and small blind is not a good, yeah. good spot to be.
But, yeah, I do agree. I agree with that.
But hey, congratulations, though.
I'm happy for him, though. I mean, yeah. he took that. That was a great bet. I mean, the bet worked. You know,
well, I mean, the other thing, too, is to think about is look how difficult this hand became for him, right?
Yeah.
That's really the thing. It doesn't matter what I win or lose. I think, you know, I mean, go back to our good friend Lee Child.
Yeah.
He's like, you know, I just don't want to. The fewer, harder decisions I put myself in, the better chance I have to win.
Yep. Absolutely.
And this is these were tough decisions almost all the way through.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not all the way through, but certainly there are some tough decisions here.
Yeah.
Because of our position.
All right. Hey, I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@anteupmagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@anteupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.